and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Old radio offered an amazing amount of variety, with detectives, sitcoms, mystery, and musical shows. In the next few weeks, we'll be giving our audience a sampler of all those genres. This week, we have a favorite detective, Johnny Dollar. Various actors played the part over many years, but most people agree that the writing and acting was best when Bob Bailey played Johnny Dollar. In honor of Abraham Lincoln's birthday, our first episode involves the disappearance of an original handwritten copy of President Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Enjoy yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the Meek Memorial Matter, first broadcast March 3rd, 1957 on CBS. This is an Armed Forces Radio and Television Service rebroadcast.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Where have you been for the past 20 minutes?
In the shower.
For 20 minutes?
Okay, so I'm a shiny dollar.
So you're... Oh.
Who's that?
Max Green at Assured Equity.
Oh, hi, Max. What's on your mind?
87 years ago...
Our father's brought forth, but that doesn't answer my question.
Johnny, you ever hear of the Meeks?
New England family, stowed away in the Mayflower, speak only to their money?
That's the Meeks.
What about them?
No, not about them. It's about Mariah Meek and Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. She's lost her copy of it.
Well, it shouldn't be hard to find her another one.
That's where you're wrong, Johnny.
Huh?
It would be very hard. Might cost us $100,000.
Bob Bailey. In the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. To the Assured Equity and Trust Company, 325 Scott Avenue, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Meek Memorial matter. Expense account item one, $1.90. Cab from my apartment to Max Green's office. He was standing in a haze of cigar smoke, ashes on his vest, and a worried look on his face.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Johnny. Oh, you want a cigar?
Oh, no, thanks.
Then sit up. Excuse me. Listen, Johnny... What do you know about that speech that Lincoln made at Gettysburg?
Well, I had to memorize it in school like every other kid.
All right. You know how many words are in it?
Maybe a couple of hundred. Why?
Wait a minute. It's in this book. Yeah. It's page 143. The speech is printed here exactly as Mr. Lincoln released it to the newspapers after the Gettysburg Address. You find it?
Yeah, but now what do you...
Okay. Total number of words, 268.
Oh.
But the first two drafts of that speech, including the one he read that day... contained only 266 words.
So he padded his part.
That's right. Two more words.
Mm-hmm. How come?
Oh, according to the historians, Lincoln ad-libbed the two additional words at the time he read it. Later on, when he made three new copies of the speech, he included those two words. You with me so far?
Keep going, Max. Yes.
All right. Right down at the end of it, just before Of the People, By the People, where he said that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, the words under God do not appear in the first two drafts he wrote.
Yeah. Well, this is all very interesting, Max, but I still don't see what it is or what it has to do with me.
Well, Mariah Meek's copy has disappeared.
Oh?
And, Johnny, that copy happens to contain just 266 words.
You mean she owns one of the first two original drafts?
Handwritten by Mr. Lincoln himself while he was on the train riding to Gettysburg.
Wowie.
Yeah. Which is, of course, why we insured it for the full amount it cost her. Which is $100,000 even.
Of course, you made sure it was authentic before you issued the policy.
Oh, naturally.
Well, who'd she buy it from?
An antique dealer down in Richmond, Virginia, a fellow named Jason Penrod.
Uh-huh. Well, where's she been keeping it?
Under glass, in the Meek Memorial.
What's that?
Well, she collects Americana, so she had a museum built to keep it in, and she calls it the Meek Memorial.
Follows?
Follows. Also follows the most expensive item in the collection, the Gettysburg Address, would be the one to disappear.
Oh, you're just an old pessimist, Max. You think somebody lifted it?
What do you think? It walked out by itself.
Okay. So what are you going to do about it?
Well, we're going to run newspaper ads. We're going to offer a $10,000 reward for information leading to its return. If anyone answers it, you let me know where you'll be, and I'll refer them to you.
Good. When was it taken?
The night before last.
Is there any kind of market for something that rare?
Hard to say, Jolly. A hot camera would be easier to peddle.
Sure.
But a good many wealthy people, like Mrs. Meek, they make a hobby of collecting things, you know, antiques, objects of art, etchings.
But whoever took this or buys it from the thief couldn't just let everybody see it.
Well, it wouldn't matter to some people. They take it and put it in a vault and keep it there.
Then what's the point in having it around?
Pride of possession. You got something no other collector could own.
And, of course, it might not have really disappeared at all.
You're thinking of fraud?
$100,000 is a lot of cash. Expense account item 2, $1.90, cab fare back to my apartment. I wasn't particularly intrigued by this assignment. Rare documents, like anything else antique, have always seemed to be just one step from decay. And that sometimes goes for the people who collect such things. Item 3, $16.10, transportation, including a round-trip ticket, Hartford to New Bedford, and cab fare to the Whalers Hotel. There was a convention in town, so I was lucky to get a room. After checking in, I called the Meek residence. Mrs. Meek was expecting me and said she'd have her car pick me up. I had just put down the phone when someone knocked on the door.
You in there?
Depends on what you're looking for.
Well, I'm looking for Mr. Jake.
Jay, did you say? Nobody by that name here.
Oh, yeah. I see. I guess I got the wrong room.
Yeah, well, why don't you ask down at the desk?
Huh? Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Huh. Funny. Where is it? I cracked the door open again. Watched him walk to the stairs. Then I took the elevator down the 8 flights to the lobby. Half an hour later, I was in the back seat of the Meek limousine heading toward the home out on Buzzards Bay. It was a big, sprawling frame building facing on the beach. About 50 yards behind it, closer to the road, was the Meek Memorial Museum. I was starting up the front steps when the door opened.
Mr. Dollar?
That's right.
I'm Paul Meek. I understand you have an appointment with my grandmother.
Right again.
Now come in, please. She's waiting for you upstairs in the sitting room.
Okay, thanks.
Before you go up, I wonder if I could have a few words with you.
Why not?
Stay in here, then. You've never met my grandmother, have you?
No, I haven't had that pleasure.
Some people consider it a dubious one, Mr. Dollar.
Oh?
Mr. Dollar, this is my wife, Janice.
Mrs. Me?
Hi. How about a drink?
Thanks, not just now.
How about you, old stick in the mud? You want another one?
After a bit, Janice. And if I were you, I wouldn't have any more.
But you're not me, are you?
You will have to excuse my wife, Mr. Dollar. Well, we've both been under a severe strain since moving here. Grandmother is blind, you know.
No, I didn't know.
Her sight began failing about 4 years ago. I'm surprised the insurance agent didn't tell you.
Well, Mr. Green was so concerned over the theft of the Lincoln manuscript, I imagine it slipped his mind.
Mm-hmm. And just how do you intend to locate that manuscript?
I'm not so sure that I can.
It'd be a pity if you couldn't.
It'd be just awful.
It's grandmother's prized possession. She hasn't been herself since it was stolen. And being quite elderly, well, we're all very much concerned.
Oh, my, yes. We're afraid she might die and leave us all that lovely money.
Janice.
It's the truth. You see, Paul and I don't have any money of our own, Mr. Dower. We'll never have any until she does die. Instead of giving it to us now while we're young, you know what she does with it? Spends it buying junk for that soy old museum.
Now, look.
That's gratitude, isn't it? I bathe her, feed her rubber feet, and do all her dirty work.
Janice, you've said quite enough. Mr. Dollar isn't interested in our personal problems.
Oh, sick in the mud. All right. I'll be in the den if you want me. And that's the funniest thing I've said all day. If you want me.
I'm sorry. She doesn't mean half of what she says. Oh, that's grandmother's signal.
Then hadn't we better go up?
Yes. Yes, we'd better.
We went up the broad staircase, through a hall, and into a bright, sunny room. Wrapped in an old kimono and shawl, Martha Meek sat in an invalid chair, facing the ocean. Paul introduced us, then sat down quietly near the door.
Paul, I know you're there. Now answer me.
Yes, grandmother.
You go on downstairs. I want to talk with Mr. Dollar in private.
Whatever you say.
and close that door. Don't mind my back, Mr. Dollar. I couldn't see you if I looked into your face. Now then, when are you going to arrest that crook and bring my Lincoln speech back to me?
Well, I'm going to need a lot of help and information, Mrs. Meek.
Mm-hmm. What kind of information?
Mostly about the museum.
Like what?
Well, do you know who was in there the night the manuscript disappeared?
Certainly. That dirty robber was.
Anyone else?
Well, old Pete's always there. Supposed to be guarding the place, but he didn't do a very good job the other night. Got himself slugged.
Does he live on the grounds?
Yes. I brought him over from Naples 10 years ago. He was my guide in Italy. Showed me around so nice, I decided to bring him back.
Tell me, is the memorial open to the public?
It was going to be. I intended it to be once. But when my eyes... No, Mr. Dollar, I keep it locked most of the time.
And who discovered the manuscript was missing?
Pete did, I guess. At least when he recovered, he ran yelling bloody murder up here to the house. Everybody went down to see what had happened. Everybody but me. They left me all to myself.
Were there any strangers here in the house that night, Mrs. Meek? Anyone beside the servants and your grandson and his wife?
One person, but he's no stranger.
Who's that?
Jason Penrod from Richmond. He's an art dealer. We were discussing some business.
May I, ask what kind of business?
It has nothing to do with you or the people you work for.
Sorry. Where can I find Mr. Penrod?
He's staying here now. If he isn't in his room, then he's most likely out in the memorial. Now, that's enough questions. You, give me a cigarette.
Ma'am?
What's the matter, you deaf? Give me a cigarette before Paul with that snoopy wife of his comes prowling around.
All right, sure.
Light me. Well, you want any more information? Pete's the one to talk to.
All right, thanks. But what about your son and daughter-in-law? Were they inside the house at the time of the robbery?
You don't suspect them, do you?
Right now, I suspect everybody, Mrs. Meek.
Even me?
Yes, ma'am. Even you.
Well, bless you, boy.
I found Pete Vesuvio trimming the shrubbery just outside the memorial building. He seemed quite willing to talk to me.
How you say what happened to me, mister? I'm hit out?
Knocked out, Pete.
Ah, si, senor. And because of this, I do not see anything.
Nothing at all, huh?
Please, mister, do not use the insult. I am American citizen first papers. And because of the kindness of my patron, I will soon be second papers. I know by heart the Constitution, United States, Gettysburg Address, pledge allegiance to my flag.
Yeah.
You know how I know that these things which help me be citizen? Because of my lady, she's letting me work in a place where great papers are for me to read. Because of her, I would not hide anything, mister.
Okay, Pete, okay. I'm convinced.
But I'm sorry I cannot help you, mister.
Well, it's not your fault.
Hey, you like to hear me say Gettysburg Address?
Well,
do it very good. Learn it right from President's own writing.
Some other time, Pete. Right now, I have to find Mr. Penrod.
Oh, he's inside, mister. Counting the treasures. All of the beautiful things my lady can no longer see. You'll find him in Section L, senor.
I found the small, neat-appearing art dealer just where Pete had said he'd be, peering into a glass case crowded with Derringer pistols. He had a notebook under his arm and seemed to be making some sort of inventory.
Oh, dear. You gave me quite a fright, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I wish I could concentrate like that.
Oh, well, there's nothing more interesting to me than these fine old pistol things. What history they must have, Mr.
Dollar. Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yes, the insurance investigator. Paul told me you were wondering about the place. I suppose you'd like to ask me some questions, hmm?
If you don't mind.
Oh, no, goodness, no.
I understand you were with Mrs. Meek the night of the robbery.
That is correct, sir. We heard the shouting. We ran out here just as fast as we could. I was the one who discovered the manuscript was missing.
You have any idea how the thief got in here?
No, sir, no, no. Unless someone forgot to lock the front door, or unless he had a key.
Well, has Mrs. Meek given out many of the keys?
Well, in my opinion, too many. Even I have one.
What about Paul Meek and his wife?
No, I don't think so. Well, they really aren't interested in the museum at all, Mr. Dollar.
Mr. Penrod, I understand you're quite an authority on antique art and things like that.
Well, I...
Isn't taking inventory a little beneath your position?
Well, I suppose it is, Mr. Dolliver. Last week when I received dear Maria's wire asking me to do it, I simply couldn't refuse. She's been such a good customer of mine, Willie.
Yes. You have any idea who might have wanted the Lincoln manuscript?
Well, I know several persons who'd love to have it. You can give most anything, but I don't know anyone with the nerve to break in here and take it by force.
You remember where Paul Meek and his wife were when you heard Pete shouting?
They were right in here when I arrived.
I see. Well, thanks for... Oh, just one more thing.
Oh, yes?
If you'd stolen the manuscript...
Mr. Dollar...
A hypothetical question, Mr. Penrod. But if you had, and you wanted to sell it at a good price with the least danger of being caught, how would you go about it?
Well, I take it abroad, of course. I put it on the open market over there.
Huh. You aren't planning on going abroad soon, are you, Mr. Penrod?
Oh, gracious, no.
You know anyone who is? Anyone who,
Well, didn't Paul and Janice tell you? They're flying to Paris Wednesday night.
I left the memorial and walked back to the house. The Meeks were in the study, engaged in their favorite pastime. When I told them what the art dealer had said, Paul set down his glass long enough to confirm the fact that they did have reservations and insisted that he had a logical explanation for not having told me of those plans earlier.
Very logical explanation, Mr. Dollar.
Let me handle this, Janice, please.
Sure. Drink, Johnny?
Now, first I want to hear that explanation, if you don't mind, Paul.
Of course I don't mind. Janice and me, we're fed up.
Why didn't you tell me about the plane reservations?
Well, why should I have? I'm not even sure I'm going to use them.
Oh?
Grandmother's upset enough over losing that manuscript. Something else might... Well, anyhow, if the manuscript doesn't turn up within 48 hours, we're canceling our trip.
Oh, no, please.
Sorry, Janice, but that's the way it's got to be.
She did it.
What do you mean?
It's an act, don't you see? Jason Penrod told her we were going to leave, so she had him hide the manuscript. And now this thing about her being so upset and having such a weak heart. It's an act to keep her precious darling boy tied to her apron strings.
I don't believe that.
Well, just wait. You will.
Anything else, Dollar?
What does a trip to Paris cost, Paul?
Well, it's not inexpensive.
Your wife was complaining about being so broke.
Haven't you ever heard of flying now and paying later?
We have friends in Paris, Dollar. It won't cost as much to live once we get there. And we'll worry about paying for our ticket when we get back.
Any other questions, Mr. Snooper?
Yeah. Later. It was after 7 when I finally got back to my hotel room. I ordered a drink and tried to make some kind of sense out of the information I'd gathered during the day. But it all added up to zero. I called Hartford and asked Max Green to look into the Meek finances. Then I dressed for dinner. I was about to go downstairs when the phone rang. Johnny Dollar.
Mr. Dollar, I was told to call you.
Yeah?
It's about the ad.
The ad?
In tonight's paper about something missing from a certain memorial.
Go on.
Well, I called Hartford Collect. They said to call you.
Yeah, that's right. Who is this?
My name's not important, Dollar, but that 10 grand reward is.
You think you can earn it?
You meet me tonight, you'll see.
Where?
In the alley behind the Bourne Whaling Museum. Be there at 9:30 and be alone. You got it?
Yeah, I got it. Expense account item 4, 85 cents cab fare from my hotel to the Bourne Whaling Museum. I don't like wandering around dark alleys at night, alone in a strange town. It isn't the best way to stay alive. But at 9:29, I passed the old whaling museum and started down the alley. It was dark, no moon, and it was very quiet. I was about 20 yards in from the street when I saw him, curled up in a ball like he had a stomach ache. Only he didn't. Because somebody had made him very dead. I struck a match and turned him over. I'd only seen him once before, but I didn't have any trouble remembering where it had been. Right after I'd checked in, he'd knocked on my hotel room door. By mistake. At least that's what he'd said. After giving a statement to the local police who identified him, I went back to my hotel.
Evening, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, say, look, I know it's probably against all your rules, but who had my room just before I checked in?
Oh, I couldn't disclose that information, sir. Sorry.
Oh, well, so am I. It'd mean a lot for me to know. Maybe even $5 worth.
Well, I... Well, sir, if it's that important... Thank you. Now, let's see. Yes, here it is. Can you read his signature, Mr. Dollar?
Yeah, thanks. Just fine. The name I'd seen scrawled on the hotel register wasn't important now. At least not without something more to back it up. There was no law against checking out of a hotel, but there was a law against murder, if it could be proven. And that would be hard to do without finding a motive. So I went back to the Meek house to look for it. I paid off the taxi, that's item 5, and started up the front steps.
Oh, hi, Johnny. I thought it might be you.
That's so?
Mm-hmm. I hope you aren't mad at me for the things I said today.
No, not at all.
I've been a very bad girl. But everything's going to be all right now.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Or haven't you heard?
Heard what?
About dear old grandmother. She's had a real bad stroke. Isn't expected to live.
You, aren't a bit sorry, are you?
Would you be, if you were me?
Dollar, you mind coming up here?
No, not a bit, Paul.
I'm trying to reach you at your hotel. Thank goodness you've come here. Did Janice tell you?
Yeah. How is she?
Bad. Doctor's given up. Says it's only a matter of hours. She told me to send for you, Mr. Dollar.
Oh?
I don't know why. I've never been able to figure out a lot of things she did.
All right, where is she?
In there. Old Pete's with her, but go on in.
Thanks.
They take increased devotion to that cause for which they here gave the last...
Who is it?
Oh, it's Mr. Dollar, my lady.
Hello, Mrs. Meek.
Oh, thank you for coming, Mr. Dollar.
I go now.
No, wait. Mr. Dollar, you have a moment, haven't you?
Of course.
I promised Pete the last time I visited the museum. I promised I'd let him recite some of the things he's learned while working there. Haven't been able to keep that promise till now. Go on, Pete. Please.
Yes, my lady. They here gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. And that the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
Thank you, my lady. Now I go.
Mr. Dollar, I have a confession to make to you.
Yes?
I lied to you.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't a very big lie, Mrs. Meek.
Oh, but it was. I told you the business Mr. Penrod and I were discussing the night of the burglary.
Yes?
I told you it had nothing to do with you or the people you work for, remember?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, that was a lie. I'm broke, Mr. Dollar. All I have left in the world is this house and the things in the memorial.
I see.
That's why I sent for Jason Penrod. He purchased most of my treasures for me. He's evaluating them now. So Paul and Janice will know what they're worth when they go to sell them, which they'll do immediately.
Mrs. Meek, don't you think you should try to rest now?
Will you give me a cigarette?
No, ma'am. Sorry. And you must rest.
There isn't much else to do, is there? Good night, Mr. Dollar.
Outside in the hall, Paul and Janice Meek were talking quietly to Jason Penrod. Off in the corner, standing with his back to the others, was Pete Vesuvio.
Mr. Dollar, is
she... She's resting quietly.
Oh, Dio grazie.
Why did you lie to me, Pete?
What? I never lied to nobody. Who say I did?
I say you did.
You're crazy, mister. What lie I tell you?
You said you learned the Gettysburg Address right from Mr. Lincoln's own writing in the museum.
That's no lie. What's the matter? You don't believe that, mister.
I believe you, Pete. But I just had to be sure. Come on, let's join the others, shall we?
See.
Well, good evening, Mr. Dollar.
Mr. Penrod.
Tell you any of the family secrets, Johnny?
Not too many.
You learn anything in there you didn't know before?
Yeah. I know which one of you stole the Lincoln manuscript.
One of us?
Oh, why, you're crazy, Dollar. We were all in the house at the time it happened.
That's right. But one of you hired a little man named Leo Jones to do your dirty work. Jones called me earlier this evening. He was going to tell me which one of you it was. Evidently, he didn't like the deal he was getting. What was he doing, Penrod, trying to blackmail you?
What are you talking about? I don't know any Leo Jones.
Then why did he come around to my hotel room this morning? The same room you just checked out of.
Well, that doesn't mean a thing. I imagine several persons have been to that room today.
Sure, but they're still alive. Now, let's get to the phony Lincoln manuscript.
Phony manuscript?
It wasn't phony, Mr. Dollar.
Wasn't it? Well, you correct me if I'm wrong, Penrod. After Mrs. Meek purchased one of the first two drafts of Mr. Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, she started losing her sight. When she closed the museum to the public, you saw a chance to make yourself another $100,000 sale. So you switched copies of the manuscript, replacing that draft with one containing the words, "Under God," which isn't worth anything close to $100,000.
What do you mean, Dollar?
All right, let me quote. "That this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom," and so on.
What?
The phrase, "under God," was not in the manuscript he sold your grandmother, but it was in the copy old Pete has been studying in the museum. Right, Mr. Penrod?
All of you, stay right where you are. You get what Jones got.
Mr. Dollar.
He won't go far, Pete.
But I am the guard. The lady will want me to stop him.
Pete, come back here.
Keep away from me.
Pete! Hey! Oh, my God!
Come on.
Oh.
You tell the lady I am a better guard now. Much better. See, senor?
Yes, Pete.
I did good.
You did fine. Pete Vesuvio will live to apply for his second papers. And in time, probably open a spaghetti joint in New Bedford. Penrod will be tried for murder. As yet, he hasn't disclosed the name of the person who purchased the stolen manuscript. But in time, I am sure he will. As for the Meeks, well, Mariah passed on later that night. But as she said, there was nothing left for her but to rest. Expense account total, including hotel and numerous incidentals, $98.30. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. Thank you.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web, with your host, Justine Ward. Next, Johnny Dollar's expense account takes us to New Orleans and the vexing matter of an insurance policy holder who doesn't want to collect after a fire destroys his business. You'll enjoy hearing this mystery solved by yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the Royal Street Matter, first broadcast November 25th, 1956 on CBS.
From Hollywood, it's time now for... Johnny Dollar.
Oh, hi, man. How's your stomach, Johnny?
What?
Rich Poot gave you any trouble?
Who is this?
Why, your old buddy, Angie Orsatti.
Oh, hi, Angie. Glad you got my message.
Yeah. How about dinner tonight at Antoine's, Johnny? Shrimp gumbo, oysters, Rockefeller.
Yeah, sounds fine. Only I've got to do some work first.
Man, I thought you was here in New Orleans on vacation.
Nope. Little matter of fire insurance and the company's check for $16,000.
Somebody trying to cheat him out of it, huh?
You won't believe this, Angie. Somebody turned it down.
What?
Bob Bailey, in the exciting adventures of a man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Providential Fire and Marine, 787 Greenleaf Avenue, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Royal Street matter. Expense account item 1, $103.82, transportation to New Orleans. Item 2, $4.20, cab from the airport to the Roosevelt Hotel. After unpacking, I put in the call to my old friend, Angie Orsatti. Nobody knows the French Quarter or the people living there like Angie does. For 3 months of the winter, he stays in the swamp, trapping muskrats. The rest of the year, he lives with his mother near the Cabildo. Angie wasn't in, but his mother said she knew where to reach him, and 5 minutes later, he returned my call. We arranged to meet for dinner, then I phoned the agent who had sold the policy in question. His name's Binford, and naturally, he was anxious to see me. C.D. Binford's office is on the third floor of the Hibernia Bank building. He's a stocky, red-faced man, probably in his late 50s.
Come in, Mr. Dollar. Come in, come in.
Thanks.
Help yourself to the chair. Say, you fellas sure don't waste any time, do you?
We try not to, Mr. Binford.
C.D., boy.
What?
You call me C.D. like all the other folks do.
Oh, okay, C.D.
Yeah. Now, like I was saying, you boys sure don't waste any time at all. Why, I didn't even call the home office till day before yesterday.
I know. When was the fire?
Last week, on Thursday night. What'd they tell you about it?
Well, not very much. Figured I'd get all the information from you.
Well, it's a doozy. First time I've ever run across a policyholder who wasn't yelling for us to pay him yesterday for his loss today. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Who is the insured, C.D.?
Man named DuPas, Henry DuPas. Took out a policy for $48,000. That's full coverage on his antique shop down on Royal Street.
How long ago?
August, just 3 months back. I'd been after him for, maybe 5-6 months to buy some protection, but he kept saying he didn't have the money.
Didn't have the money.
And one day I dropped in to see him about his car insurance, and right off he told me to write a policy giving him full fire coverage on the shop.
Well, how do you arrange to pay it?
Cash, in full, the day I delivered the policy.
He tell you why he changed his mind?
Yeah, not exactly. Bet he mentioned something about times being better. I reckon there must have been.
Why'd he say that?
Well, a few days later, he had the back part of his shop all painted and fixed up. And that's the part that burned. And he hired himself a girl to work in the office. A real good looker, too.
Well, what caused the fire, you know?
I sure do. Antique kerosene lamp got knocked over accidental. According to what DuPont told the fireman, he was in the back of the shop with a customer showing him the lamp.
Uh-huh.
When it fell, the fire started. The two of them tried to put it out. Reckon that's why they didn't call the fire department right off.
Uh-huh. And did DuPont tell you the same thing?
DuPont? He didn't tell me nothing.
Well, he reported the fire to you, didn't he?
He did not. And that's what's got me so riled up. I wouldn't know about it now if I hadn't dropped in there the other day.
Was DuPont there when you stopped in?
Yes, sirree. And when I saw the place look, the whole back of the store gutted out and the slew of his antiques destroyed, I let him have both barrels, I tell you.
Oh, what'd he say to that?
Yeah, nothing too much. Just acted like he wasn't interested in whether we paid for it or not. Didn't even ask for a claim for him.
That's funny.
Sure is. I thought maybe he was so upset over losing some of this valuable antiques, he didn't know what he was doing.
Mm.
So, after I checked with the fire department, got a copy of their report, I typed up a claim for him.
You figured the damage is $16,000, right?
Mm-hmm. I knew how much he spent fixing up the back. When I'd issued the policy, I'd gotten an estimate on most of the antiques.
So what happened when you gave him the claim? He signed it?
He did not. Said to forget about the fire.
Huh.
And when I kept after him, he called me a busybody and told me to get out of his shop and stay out.
What do you think, C.D.? You have any idea why he didn't report it or sign that claim?
If I had, boy, I wouldn't have sent for you.
I left Binford's office and walked over to Canal Street. The sun had gone down and a cool breeze was coming in off the river, bringing with it the smell of coffee beans and fruit from the banana boats. I crossed Canal and turned onto Royal, heading into the French Quarter. When I reached Henry DuPont's antique shop, I stopped. There are a lot of antique shops on Royal. All of them look pretty much the same. The buildings as old as the fine rosewood mahogany pieces they shelter. There was nothing different about this one, at least from the outside. The fire had started and finished in the rear of the building. I tried the front door, but it was locked. I didn't think anyone would be there that late, but I knocked anyway.
Yes, who is it?
Mr. DuPont.
Who is it?
My name's Dollar, Mr. DuPont. I represent the Providential Fire Marine.
Why do you people persist in annoying me?
Well, we wouldn't if you'd tell us about the fire.
There's nothing special about that fire, Mr. Dollar. It was an accident.
Well, then why didn't you file a claim? You're entitled to enough money to cover your loss.
Mr. Binford explained that to me quite carefully. If you haven't talked to him, Mr. Dollar, you should.
Oh, I've talked to him.
Well, then go away.
Well, not until you answer a few
questions. No, leave me alone, please.
I'd noticed an alley next to the shop that ended where the rear door had been. I started back along it, not quite sure what I was looking for or what I expected to find. But I was sure of one thing. DuPont was a frightened man. It was too dark to see anything at the end of the alley, so I returned to the street. Item 3, $30.50, phone call, taxi, and dinner for two at Antoine's.
Oh, man. Kind of nice, ain't it, Johnny?
Hmm?
Oh, the way it never changes. Same waiter, same chef, same clientele.
Yeah. Like another Cafe Royale, ain't she?
No, thanks. Well, Johnny?
Yeah?
Well, when you gonna ask me?
Ask you what?
Oh, don't kid me. John, you've had that old bloodhound look in your eye ever since we sat down. What's the question?
Okay, Angie. What do you know about a man named Henry DuPont?
DuPont's antique shop?
That's right.
Oh, not much. Seen him around some, so.
Yeah, where?
Oh, you know what kind of places I like, Johnny.
Yeah, but I can't picture DuPont liking them.
Well, maybe he don't, but... Maybe that little old blonde he's been carrying with him does.
Blonde?
Yeah, you know. Female, girl, bleached hair.
I know.
Yeah.
How old?
Oh, 24, 5. Yeah, real nice for old coot like him.
Real winter and spring, huh?
Yeah.
You seen them together often?
Oh, a few times. Saw him about 2 weeks ago at Butcher's place. Hey, you know something? I walked in there that night with a 5 and I walked out with 200. How about that?
Great. You know who the blonde is?
No, but I might be able to find out. You want?
Yeah, I want. I left Angie and started back toward Royal Street. On the way, I ran up item 4, $1.85 for one flashlight and batteries. The shades on DuPont's shop were drawn, but I could tell there were lights on inside. In the alley, a small pickup truck was parked near the side entrance to the shop. In the back of the truck, looking like they'd just been taken off the boat, were several stalks of bananas. There wasn't much else to see except the charred wood and refuse left in the alley after the fire. I started back toward the street when a man, a much larger man than DuPont, came out the side door and got into the truck. He turned over the engine and switched on the lights before I could get clear.
Hey, what are you doing there? Hold it, mister, right there. Here, buddy, you just hold it. What were you doing back there, huh?
Well, right now, mister, I'm wondering what this load of bananas is doing in an antique shop.
What is it, Carl?
Well, I just caught this guy snooping around in the back.
It's Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, that's right.
You know him, DePa?
He's one of those insurance men I told you about.
Oh, well, what are you here for, Dollar? Didn't DePa tell you he doesn't want any money from you people?
Now, why not? Because he's afraid we might have to take a good look around before paying
no,
off.
No, sir.
Now, look, Dollar. Mr. DePa has been okay with you people, so you got no reason to come snooping around. Especially after he's told you he don't want you around. So now maybe Mr. DePa will have to do something to keep you away. Ain't that right, Mr. DePa? You know what I mean.
Yes. Yes, all right. I'll do it, Carl. And he'll never bother us again.
Go on, Dollar. Get out of here.
At the time, I had no idea what they meant to do, so it wasn't easy to turn my back on them. But I did. And nothing happened. I went back to my hotel and hit the sack, and I must confess I slept later than usual the next morning. I was still in bed when the phone rang. Johnny Dollar.
Well, hey now, where's my dynamic northern friend?
Oh, he's off today. I'm taking his place.
Well, in the news I got, well, I reckon it'll keep till tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, so long.
No, wait, Angie. Did you find out anything about that blonde DePa's been seeing?
Sure. Everybody around the French Market coffee shop used to know her. Used to, meaning up till she went to work for Mr. DePa.
She worked for DePa?
Yeah, in the office at his store. Started in there about 3 months ago.
Well, come on.
Well, since then, nobody sees her anymore. At least none of her old gang.
You know where she lives?
Yep. The Pont Alba Apartments. That is, unless she has moved.
Well, what's her name?
Rose Allen.
What?
Yeah, she used to be a dancer. Had enough for you to go on?
Yeah, Angie, thanks. That's plenty. Expense account item 5, $1.40 cab fare from my hotel to the Pontalba Apartments. The list of names on the register near the manager's office told me Rose Ellen's apartment was number 215. But when I got up there, the girl who opened the door wasn't a blonde.
Yes?
Oh, I'm looking for Miss Rose Ellen.
She isn't in.
Oh, she at work?
Who are you? I mean, are you a friend of hers?
My name's Dollar, Johnny Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator.
Well, she hasn't done anything, has she?
Well, not that I know of. Look, Miss...
Garbo.
Garbo?
May Garbo.
You're a dancer, aren't you?
How'd you guess?
Oh, I'm good at recognizing talent.
Oh? Would you like to come in? I've got some coffee on.
Well, that'll be just fine. Say, you've certainly got a nice view of the square from here.
I suppose.
Don't you think so?
Oh, sure, if you like that sort of thing. Me, I just think the square's kind of square.
Oh, that's good. That's very good.
I thought it up the day we moved here.
You and Rose move in here together?
Uh-huh. Oh, sit down, Johnny. Make yourself at home.
Well, thanks.
Gee, you're so polite. You wait to be asked.
Yeah. Look, tell me, what time do you think Rose will be home?
Oh, I couldn't say.
May, this is important. What time does she usually get home?
Well, I don't know. I mean, after all, she's got her own life to live, you know. And I'm not her keeper.
Okay.
Sometimes she doesn't get home for days. Oh, I better get the coffee.
She ever say anything to you about the fire?
Huh? What fire?
The fire down at the antique shop.
No, you want cream and sugar?
No, thanks, just black.
Good. When was that?
The fire? Last Thursday night.
That's funny.
What's funny?
That was the last time I saw her.
What?
Yeah. Rose went to work last Thursday. But she never came home.
Act
Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. You don't have to be a special investigator to know that Americans don't take their civic responsibilities lightly. The Election Day turnout proved that, beyond any shadow of doubt. So now it's time for you to face up to another responsibility to the nation in just as straightforward a way. Our Ground Observer Corps needs volunteers. We at CBS Radio urge you to write or telephone your nearest Civil Defense Center to learn how you can help in this vast program that patrols our skies. Now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Royal Street Matter.
This was the screwiest deal I'd ever seen. A guy refusing insurance money he was entitled to. Rose Ellen was my one lead, so I continued questioning May, her roommate. May told me this was the first time Rose had been away so long without at least sending for a change of clothes. I asked about Rose's boyfriends. She told me Rose had been going with one other man beside DuPont, but she didn't know who he was. After May promised to call me if she heard from Rose Ellen, I left. Expense account item 6, $1.90, taxi from the Pontalba Apartments to the Hibernia Bank Building. My insurance contact, Binford, wasn't in. So while I waited for him, I wondered again why DuPont had refused to sign the claim for the fire damage to his shop. Could he afford a loss of $16,000? I wondered if something had happened in that shop, something DuPont tried to cover up with a fire. I was wondering what it could have been when Binford walked in.
Well, I'm glad you're here, Johnny. We got trouble.
Huh?
I hear you paid DuPont a call last night.
That where you've been?
Yeah. He phoned me about 10, wanted me there fast. Oh, boy. I wish I had sense enough to stay away.
Well, what happened, C.D.?
Before I tell you that, you tell me what he said to you last night.
Nothing important. Just something about fixing it so I couldn't bother him again.
Oh? Well, he did.
How?
He canceled his fire insurance policy and every other policy ever bought from him.
Cancel?
Yeah. So you might as well go on back to your hotel and pack, Johnny. It's none of your affair now, no matter what he's up to.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's too bad it had to turn out this way. You want a drink before you go?
Yeah, I guess I need one.
Yeah. What'll it be, scotch or rye?
Scotch, neat, please.
Good, saves making a mess. When you reckon you leave?
Oh, I don't know. I'll check with the airline when I get back to the hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
Thanks.
Better luck next time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's that.
C.D.
Hmm?
What about the policy?
Policy?
Did he return the policy to you?
No. He said do it tomorrow.
But he's covered until he does return it. Does he know that?
Why, no. I don't reckon he does.
Good, good. He might get careless. And as long as that policy is in force, I can bother him as much as I want.
Oh, I don't see what's the use, Johnny. He'll have it here by tomorrow evening.
That still gives me 24 hours to get lucky. C.D., you said something about a customer being with him when that kerosene lamp was knocked over.
Mm-hmm. According to what he told the fire department, there was.
You had that person's name?
Well, I should have. I took it in the fire department report. I got that right here. Here it is. Now, let's see. Mm-hmm. The name's Andrew W. DeLong. Address, 1515 West Claiborne.
There wasn't any Andrew DeLong at that address. We checked the telephone book and the city directory, and the only Andrew W. DeLong we found was out in Metairie, in a mausoleum. So we drove back towards C.D.'s office.
Well, now what, Johnny?
DuPont.
Huh?
Find out everything we can about DuPont and everybody who works for him.
But ain't nobody but his secretary and his assistant. Fella named Carl.
Yeah, how long has Carl been working for him?
Oh, about as long as she has.
Does this Carl own a fruit stand?
Well, not that I know about. Why?
Oh, I just wondered. Hey, what time is it, C.D.?
2:15. Say, if we're going to check on DuPont's credit, we better get to the bank before the close.
You're driving. Let's move.
Expense account item 7, $22.80. Telephone calls and a couple of gratuities to obtain a lot of information about DuPont. I learned, among other things, that he banked almost $11,000 in the past 3 months. Before that, almost nothing. But there's no law against making money, so I still had nothing concrete to go on. At 5:30, I left Binford, went back to my hotel, and there found a message from May, Rose Ellen's roommate, asking me to go to her apartment immediately. So I did.
Oh, Johnny.
Yeah, hi, May.
Oh, well, come in. Johnny, you know what you made me promise.
Yeah?
Well, it happened.
You mean you've heard from Rose?
Well, no, not exactly. But a man called this afternoon and talked about her.
Oh, well, I hope he had only nice things to say.
Oh, yes. He said she's just fine.
What?
Didn't you hear me?
Yeah, he said she's fine.
Fine.
Well, what else did he say?
Well, he said he was going to come by at 4 o'clock and pick up her clothes. I should have them ready.
No, but of course he didn't.
Well, he did so.
He did? Oh, what man? You know him? You get his name?
Mr. Dollar. You don't think I'd let Rose's things go out of here with a complete stranger, do you? Of course he told me his name.
Well?
You aren't nearly as polite as you were this morning.
All right, I'm sorry. What's the man's name, darling?
Oh, well, that's much better. It's Grant.
Grant?
That's right.
That doesn't register.
From the way he talked, he must be the one Rose was going with while she was dating that old antique.
You ever see this guy, Grant, before?
No, but I'm sure he's the one she talked about. Really, it used to get so tiresome. Carl this and Carl does that. Oh.
What?
I said, oh.
May, tell me, where did he say he was taking her clothes?
Well, he didn't say. He just put them in that old truck.
Thanks, sweetheart. See you later. I needed a fast car and a driver who could handle it, so I called Angelo Arsati. 20 minutes later, we parked in front of DuPont's antique shop. There was a dim light on inside. Look, brother, there's really no reason for you to get mixed up in this thing.
Are you kidding, son? Looks like DuPont ain't gonna answer.
All right, let's see what this hunk of stone will do to the glass. Here.
Hey, that got it. I can reach through to lock.
Looks like nobody here. Well.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, I see him. Carl, what happened to you?
Dollar.
Angie, call an ambulance. Tell him a man's been stabbed here.
Yeah, right, Johnny.
Dollar, get to her before he can.
DuPont?
Gonna kill Rose. You got to help her.
DuPont wants to kill her? Why?
She found out. Smuggling.
Is that what DuPont's been up to?
Smuggling in banana shipments. Rose found out.
Where is she?
He thought I'd killed her, but I love her.
Yeah, well, look, tell me.
You gotta get to her before he does.
Where is she?
Old Spanish fortress.
Yeah?
Out on Bayou Slidell.
Old Spanish fortress on the Bayou Slidell.
Yeah.
You know where that is, Angie?
Oh, sure. An old ruin out in the swamp north of town near the highway bridge that goes over to the Gulf Coast.
Carl, how long ago did DuPont leave?
10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, we could beat him, Johnny, by cutting across the swamps. That is, if you could take it.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's rugged.
Like what?
Johnny, did you ever ride a swamp buggy?
Brother.
Yeah?
How much farther, Angie?
Well, should be right up ahead.
How can you tell? All I can see is swamp and marsh grass.
Yeah, well, I done a lot of trapping out here. I know the channel.
Think we'll make the old ruins before DuPont?
Well, we got to, don't we? Hey, there it is.
That old wreck is called a fortress?
Man, that's it.
Well, get us up as close to it as you can. I don't see anybody parked. Nobody approaching the bridge.
There we are.
Come on, let's go.
Hey, look, John. There she is at the side entrance.
Yeah, I see. Rose! Rose Ellen!
She's scared. She ducked back inside.
Rose! We're friends of Carl's.
He sent us to help you.
Well, come on, Johnny.
We can get inside to her through this here doorway.
Okay. This place looks like it's about ready to fall apart. Rose!
Yeah, man. Dark in here, too.
Yeah.
Don't step on them fallen bricks.
Okay. Rose! Rose Ellen!
Where's Carl?
DuPont tried to kill him.
Oh, no.
Rose, come on out here where we can see you. Rose!
DuPont, he found out that Carl didn't kill me, is that it?
Yeah, but Carl's all right now. Look, Rose, I want you to tell me all you know about the fire at DuPont's shop. Were you there?
Yes.
Well, what happened?
DuPont had me tied up. Told Carl I'd found out what they were doing. The smuggling, I mean. He told Carl to kill me. He didn't know Carl and I was going to be married.
Go on, go on.
Carl argued with him. That's when the lamp got knocked over. They didn't stop arguing until DuPont said he'd kill us both. So finally, Carl told DuPont he'd take care of me. Well, he had to, or DuPont would have killed us.
But instead, Carl brought you here.
Yes.
Oh, come on, Johnny. Let's get out of this dark
hole. Wait a minute, Angie. Rose, do you know why DuPont was afraid to report his fire to the insurance company?
Some of the things he smuggled in was lost in the fire. If anybody come poking around, they might have found out what he's doing.
What was he smuggling, do you know?
Little tiny boxes filled with white powder, hidden in the bananas.
Johnny, narcotics.
Yeah, sure. No wonder he banked so much money so fast.
I bank much more. Huh? After I get rid of you, Dollar.
Look at that. There he is in the door.
Yeah, watch it.
See, I ain't fooling, Dollar.
He can't see us.
No, but what a target he makes in that doorway against the light.
No gun,
Johnny? No. We can try one of these bricks.
Yeah, man, but if you miss...
Dollar!
Wish me luck.
Yeah.
Dollar!
Right here, DuPont! Come on.
Oh, man, dear. You could qualify for the New York Yankees, Johnny.
All right, DuPont, on your feet. Let's get out of here. Expense account total, including rental on the swamp buggy, incidentals and transportation back to Hartford, $517.20. Remarks? Well, where he's going, DuPont wouldn't have any use for the insurance money anyway. Carl Grant turned state's evidence and clinched the smuggling charges against him. Because of that, Carl may get off easy. I hope so. He and Rose could make a very happy couple. End of remarks, end of report. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. If we are to remain alert to possible acts of aggression, we need the continuous operation of the Ground Observer Corps. And if the Ground Observer Corps is to remain on the job around the clock 7 days a week, your help is needed. Tomorrow, telephone your nearest civil defense center and volunteer a few hours of your time each week to the Ground Observer Corps. Join our Ground Observer Corps at the civil defense center nearest your home. Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, three sets of twins, two men, two girls, and two fires that hit the coast of Florida with the impact of a hurricane. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. Written by Charles B. Smith, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Forrest Lewis, Lou Merrill, Lawrence Dobkin, and Frank Gersel. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino and Carl Fortina. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Cumberly speaking.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. And we're now on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.